Hello and welcome to our first ever episode of Keeping the Republic. I am your host, Brian Baker, and I'm very glad that you are joining us today. Before we get started, let me just introduce myself to you. I am a officer in the U.S. Army Reserve, branched military intelligence, but that's only once a month. So for the rest of my time, I teach AP U.S. History, AP American Government, and AP World History at a charter school in the Phoenix area. I love to write. If you'd like to see my written work, which is mostly focused on national security, you can see the contributors section of the site. Okay, so Keeping the Republic, we are obviously launching a new podcast, and I'm sure you're wondering what this is all about. So when Ben Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention in September 1787, he was approached by a Mrs. Powell of Philadelphia, and Mrs. Powell said, "Well, doctor, do we have a republic or do we have a monarchy?" And Ben Franklin, who at this point was in his 80s, replied, "A republic if you can keep it." It's very interesting that Ben Franklin, one of the most optimistic men in American history, would reply in arguably a quite pessimistic fashion. You think that, upon emerging from the Pennsylvania State House, the man would be euphoric, having just written or helped to write one of the, if not the most successful governing documents in human history. But he's not. He's pessimistic, he's guarded, and I think there are probably two reasons for that. One, there was great doubt as to if the Constitution would be ratified. The document had been written in secret. Of course, the delegates to the Constitutional Convention, which they just called the Federal Convention, they didn't even have authority to write a new Constitution. They were just supposed to revise the Articles of Confederation. So there's probably some doubt because of that. I think the other reason, though, that he's pessimistic is because this was a man, like most of the framers, who was intimately familiar with the history of Rome. Most of our framers had a classical liberal arts education, and they knew that republics were fragile. So he says, "A republic if you can keep it." And I think this is something that every single American really needs to wrap their head around. The people of America are in charge of keeping the republic. When our framers chose this form of government, they bestowed great faith on the people of America. Of course, at the time, they were really only bestowing great faith in white male property owners, because those were was largely the class that could vote in America. But now, of course, this has been extended to every voting American. A republic, if you can keep it. Republics, up until this point in history, did not have a very good record. Their people largely failed to keep them. So this is really what this podcast is all about. We want to have great conversations about what it means to be American. We want to have great conversations. And by the way, most of the time, though we won't do it today, we will be discussing a great text. just with normal Americans. And by the way, we're going to be having the conversations that most Americans haven't really had since high school, if they even had these conversations. We're going to discuss the Federalist Papers. We're going to discuss Tocqueville's Democracy in America. We're going to discuss Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell address and George Washington's farewell address. We're going to talk about the Cross of Gold speech. We're going to talk about the Civil War. We're going to talk about factionalism, the Federalist Number 10. And I hope you'll join us. So I had said that our founders were intimately familiar with the history of Rome. So I want to take you back today and really talk about the start of the fall of the Roman Republic. And I'm going to argue to you that the start of the fall starts because of class inequality, factionalism, and a disregard for the Constitution of Rome. Class inequality, factionalism, and a disregard for the Constitution of Rome. So, just so we're all on the same page, the Roman Republic officially fell right around 27 BCE, and it transitioned from republic to empire. Most listeners will probably, have heard of the assassination of Julius Caesar on the Ides of March in 44 BCE, and that is part of the fall. But really, the issues that led to these strong men bringing down the Republic started much, much earlier. And today, I want to give you that story. So in 132 BCE, the bruised and bludgeoned body of Tiberius Sempronius Gracchus plunged into the Tiber River and began its long, slow journey towards the Tyrrhenian Sea. He had been beaten to death in the capital by assassins that had probably been hired by the Roman Senate. Historians now look at the death of this popular politician as the beginning of the fall. It initiated a chain of events that culminated in civil war, in the assassination of Caesar, and the rise of Octavian as the first Roman emperor. This ancient act of violence is, however, not simply an interesting historical anecdote. I truly believe that the American Republic might currently, in this very moment, be having its own Gracchus moment. Class inequality was at the heart of the factionalism that led to Tiberius's assassination. While the patricians and the commons had been at odds since the founding of Rome, which was 600 years before, the Roman Constitution had worked out a system of checks and balances that kept the Republic alive. It kept the Constitution functioning, and this largely prevented civil war and ensured a certain measure of liberty, a certain measure of liberty for the people of Rome. This is going to change, though. So as Rome expands and expands and expands, more and more land is brought into the Republic, and the commons are increasingly left out of benefiting from that land. So the elites, the patricians, were grabbing up this land They were preventing the poor from, in many instances, owning their own land. And they were also forcing the poor to fight in the Roman legions so that the elites could have more land. So Tiberius Gracchus, who, by the way, was a famous soldier, he was famous for being one of the first over the walls at Carthage. So he is elected in 133 BCE to the office of tribune, and he introduces this land reform law that's going to redistribute land from the wealthy to the poor. And the Roman Senate, which is, you know, representing the elite interests, wants nothing to do with it. A fellow tribune of Gracchus vetoes this bill. We're pretty sure that the Senate bribed this fellow tribune. And so Gracchus, instead of accepting this and sort of continuing to fight for reform within the constraints of the Roman Constitution, he decides to break it. And this is going to result, ultimately, in the fall of the Republic. So what Gracchus does is he uses the mob, right? He uses his popularity with the common people of Rome to stop public services in the city. He also has a fellow tribune illegally removed from office, and he illegally stands for re-election. The result of all of this is that the land reforms are passed, which would seemingly, you know, be a victory for the commons. However, a fatal blow had been dealt to the Republic in this moment. Though this may have been a good cause, he established a dangerous precedent. He used his popularity with the mob to get his way. These breaches of the Constitution started a riot that claimed his life, claimed the lives of 300 others. And well, historian Susan Wise Bauer, who's just fantastic, describes it this way. So I want to read this to you. Quote, "Before, Senate and Commons had managed to resolve their differences within the boundaries set by the Roman Constitution. The murder of Tiberius Gracchus ripped those boundaries apart, and they were never fully stitched together again." So obviously, Gracchus is not the only one at fault here. The Senate probably had him murdered. But the argument is that he was the first to use an extra constitutional method to get his way. And once Gracchus does it, the Senate does it, and then you're going to have 100 years of popular politicians using popular support to violate the Constitution and get their way. And ultimately, that results in the death of the Republic and the rise of the Roman Empire. Let's transition into talking about America today. So I had said that class inequality, factionalism, and disregard for the Constitution had led to the fall of Rome. Unfortunately, I see all three of those things in America today. But the question is it really worse than it's been? Our country is quite old now. Not relatively, but it's quite old. And we've seen a lot of problems before. I was very concerned, though, to see that Thomas Friedman, a few days ago in the New York Times, arguing that America is actually on the road to civil war. And at first I thought the article was hyperbolic. I thought we've seen a lot of violence in American history before. We've seen a lot of factionalism. We've seen a lot of inequality. But Friedman says, look, I saw the race riots in the 60s. I saw the Vietnam protests. This is worse. The violence isn't as bad, right? We don't have people burning down inner cities. But he really feels that the division in the country is worse than we have seen in our lifetimes. And he is genuinely concerned that we are on the road to civil war. And unfortunately, I think that he might have a point. Now, I do not think that civil war is going to break out at any moment. I think that the real worry would be for our children or our children's children to have to fight in a second American Civil War if we do not turn around this ship of state and come together and solve some of these problems. So, I had said class inequality, factionalism, and a disregard for the Constitution. Let's start with class inequality. So I would really encourage you to look up the work of Dr. Robert Bunker and John Sullivan. These are two individuals who have been writing about the plutocratic insurgency. Plutocracy means rule by the wealthy. You can also see some of this in the writing of Joseph Stiglitz. He has a great book out called The Great Divide. And basically, the last 30 years in American history have seen a massive shrinking of the middle class and a concentration of wealth in the top 1% of the nation. The wealth inequality we're seeing today is reminiscent, and this is what these men are arguing, it's reminiscent of the Gilded Age in America. It really is that bad. Things don't seem that bad now, but we might feel differently if we see another financial crisis. So I'm not going to go too deep into that today. That's not where I want to focus, but I will post some of the work by these men so you can just sort of look at how that's playing out. And by the way, their thesis is that this growing wealth inequality is really because of globalization and how it's been mismanaged. Globalization has largely been managed to benefit the top 1% of society. And obviously that's something that's resonating in America. Just look at the 2016 election if you want more on that. Okay, factionalism. This is the thing I'm worried about the most. We've just had this horrific debacle of the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation process. And I talk to people on both sides of this issue, and the language that was used, like I heard the word enemy used a lot, and it sounded like people really meant it, which is really concerning. As an AP government teacher, one of my jobs is to teach my students how to debate and how to have a respectful conversation with someone that they disagree with. There was shouting in my class. I mean, I had to stop the debate. Basically, just had students that that could not talk about this issue without screaming. And unfortunately, I think that a lot of America was at that same place. So I don't want to, ruin podcast number two, because episode number two is going to be on James Madison's The Federalist Number 10, which is devoted to, largely devoted to factions. But I do want to give you this thought, okay? I think the two-party system itself is to blame for a lot of this. I'm going to read to you one of my favorite quotations from American history, because I think it's incredibly relevant and incredibly powerful. It was written by John Adams in 1780. He's actually talking about the Articles of Confederation Constitution in this quotation, but it's definitely still relevant under our current Constitution. Quote, "There is nothing which I dread so much as the division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and concerting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is to be dreaded as the greatest political evil under our Constitution." End quote. The problem with the two-party system is that whenever an issue arises, which factions tend to form around single issues, whenever an issue arises, the Republicans pick one side, the Democrats pick the other, and now you immediately have two factions going at each other. We're going to have a whole nother discussion on the two-party system and what we can do about it. So I'm going to stop that conversation right there. But I do want you to think about the two-party system and if it's really good for our country. So the third point, right, the third parallel I see between the Gracchus story and today is the disregard for the Constitution. Going back to the Brett Kavanaugh thing, and by the way, this is like my third recording because I've been trying to address this in a nonpartisan way. And just so you know, I did not vote for Donald Trump. I did not vote for Hillary Clinton. Voted for someone else. But I'm really not partisan, probably as much as someone can be in this. But every time I try to talk about it, it sounds like I'm either favoring the Republicans or the Democrats. So I'm not even going to go there. But what I will say is this. Over the last maybe 10 years, we have disregarded the sort of normal, like the accepted way that we have confirmed Supreme Court justices. And I think both sides are to blame. Absolutely, both sides are to blame for this. But I'm really worried, and I don't want to get into the details, but I'm really worried that what we just saw was a sort of disregard for the normal constitutional ways of doing things. And I'm very worried that that is going to become the new norm, just like using the masses to get your way became the new norm in Rome. So I will just leave you with that. And well, I guess I'll add one more thing. If you think that your side in this Brett Kavanaugh thing has no fault, you just might be part of the problem. Just maybe. Because I guess I could be wrong, but I see so much fault on both sides here. And I think if we just point to the other side and say, them, all this is their fault, I think we're going to be on the road to losing our republic and failing to keep it. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up here. This is sort of the intro episode. It's short compared to what we have coming next. Our next discussion, and it will be a discussion, it won't just be me bloviating, so if you didn't appreciate me talking your ear off, give us one more shot, because next time we're going to bring in a panel, and we're going to have a seminar on James Madison's The Federalist Number 10. This is arguably the most important Federalist paper, or maybe tied with The Federalist 51. It's about factions, it's about the tyranny of the majority, it's incredibly relevant today. So please check out that conversation. If you liked what you heard today, please do share this pod on Twitter or whatever platform you prefer. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a very, very pleasant day, and we hope you will be committed to keeping the Republic. Got the